Podcasting Network, found exclusively at WrestlingWithJollers.com. And welcome to another live episode of Wrestling with Jollers. I think we're up to episode 252 now. So we are really motoring along. But today I've got another fantastic guest to grace us on this Tuesday evening. It's very, very warm here. So we've got plenty of fluids and we are kind of a little bit hot and sweaty. So I do apologise. But internationally renowned pro wrestler, competitive bodybuilder, and all round good guy, Kay Juttler. Kay, great to have you on the podcast. How are you doing, sir?
How you doing, mate? I am sweating my tits off. That's how I'm doing. I don't know whether you've got international viewers or whether it's basically the UK, but we're having an unbelievable heat wave in the UK. London has hit 40 degrees for the first time in all of recorded history. We have never hit 40 degrees in Britain, ever.
Absolutely.
It hit it now. And my fiance's got the aircon unit in the bedroom, so I'm stuck in the office. I'm going to be sweating my tits off today. I'm sorry. I've got my little hanky ready to dab myself dry.
The man's come prepped, but I'm pointing it down to the heat as to why I couldn't say internationally renowned. It is a bit of a tongue twister. I probably won't ever say that again on a podcast. But
you're going to make so many mistakes where we're just going to stumble over our words because we can't get our words out because of this.
Not at all. We are pros to the end, Kay. But thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And I want to encourage anybody watching at home, anybody watching live, if you want to get in touch, if you want to throw Kay a question or a comment, please do so using your chosen device. They'll ping through to us and we'll do our very best to bring them up live on air. And we'll do our best to answer them before the end of the broadcast. And I think we've had one or two questions come in already, which we'll bring up very, very shortly. One thing I forgot to mention during that introduction, not only are you an award winner trainer as well, but you're also an award winning comedian, Kay. Something I found out when we met back in April at Immortal Wrestling, and we'll get onto that show in a minute because that was a really, really fun show. But tell us, I know a lot of pro wrestlers like to think they're quite funny, but you are actually quite funny because you get paid to tell jokes. Tell us about your love and your passion for comedy and how that eventually ended up into you doing stand-up.
So I don't want it to sound melodramatic it's like some sort of X Factor sob story or anything, but I have had my own problems with, issues with mental health in the sense that, like manic depressive and moments where it's you're just up there and you're manic and everything is amazing and everything is just the most, and you've got these ideas bouncing off of your head and you're just energized and you've got all this, sort of momentum behind you that you can do anything and you can tackle anything. And then you get this horrendous drop, and it is a vile drop. And every time it drops, it feels like it's going to stop. And then it goes a little bit more. And then it feels like you're going to hit the bottom. And then you go a little bit more. Comedy, stand-up comedy on Netflix, stand-up comedy, the greats like, Peter Kay and Lee Evans and people like that did like monster mega shows. But even the lesser known comedians, even the smaller comedians, even just on the local circuit, doing open mics here and there, comedy, regardless of whether it was stand-up comedy or whether it was a movie like Airplane with Leslie Nielsen, which I love, anything like that, that just lifts you, and just this certain levity that just sort of just cuts through that darkness and just gives you that bit of brightness in your life. And you can even laugh about miserable things, laugh about sad things, because you can twist and turn and look at the world in a certain way. I know that obviously the world is quite sensitive at the moment, and there's a certain culture around not being allowed to joke about this, not being allowed to joke about that, but the very fact that horrible things in this world does happen, and you can still in a peculiar kind of way find levity and find humor in something. You can lift people out of the most horrible emotional situations they're in through comedy. So I've always, always loved it. And then I thought to myself, I like this. And everything I like, I try. Doesn't mean I'm any good at it, but I try it. I did that with wrestling. I loved wrestling as a kid. I wanted to do it, so I tried it. I loved gymnastics as a kid. I don't know why, like out of all the Olympic sports, gymnastics was always my favorite. And now I'm a big bloke, so I bounce around a bit like a baby elephant, but I do it. Stand-up comedy was another one of those things. I love it. I want to try it. And I'm just going to sound arrogant, and I don't mean to sound like I'm tooting my own horn, but I first stepped on the stage on the 14th of October 2018, an open mic night at the Rope Walk in Bristol. It was a 5-minute open mic spot, and I absolutely knocked them dead.
Wow.
And I walked off the stage, and the MC, who's called Greg Winfield, who's a brilliant MC, who I actually book to MC all of the shows that I produce now. He's my like resident MC that I use. He said to me, "You have absolutely no right being that good for a first timer." So I took that as a good sign. And I've since been running my own stand-up comedy shows, which are a bunch of the posters are behind me, whether that's in view for your audience.
Just
I've been
behind.
running stand-up comedy shows across the Southwest. Hugely successful. We sell out almost every show. The last show we didn't sell out, but I think that might be a sign of the times, with the pockets getting a bit tighter, energy crisis,
Absolutely.
fuel
Yeah.
getting more expensive, life is more expensive. So we didn't sell out the last show, but we've done eight and we've sold out seven of them. So it's not bad.
Okay. And I've got a couple of pictures to bring up here. I'm guessing you're
That's at the
not
Rope
given.
Walk.
That
That's at
was
the
the
Rope
one, was
Walk.
it?
Yeah,
Brilliant,
that's the
brilliant.
one.
And there you go. Like I say, with a couple more gigs under your belt, really getting to grips there with your comedy routine. And you've won. You won that award. Have you won any other awards? And tell us about the venue as well, where we can actually see you perform.
Yeah, so I won something called the Funhouse Comedy Gong Award. Funhouse has been
Yes.
running for, oh God, actually, I don't want to say, I don't want to guess how many years, because if I say it wrong, I'll get obliterated on the internet. But yeah, a guy called Spiky Mike, he's been running Funhouse Comedy for a long, long time. Reputable place, big names come and go through there. And they held a competition for these newer comedians. It was. I've got the picture behind me. It's in my office of me winning, shaking his hand, and him ha handing me the money that I won. It was in September, so I had been doing stand-up comedy for just under a year, because of course I did it on 14th of October 2018. That was September 2019 when I won, so I'd been doing comedy less than a year, and I won that award. Like I say, I know it sounds ever so arrogant to say it, but I did. I just hit the ground running. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that I was so comfortable being on stage because I've been wrestling since the age of 14. I've been wrestling for so long. I'm so comfortable being
Exactly.
in front of crowds. A lot of stand-up comedians, especially when they start, they do, the cardinal sin of when they hear silence from the audience, they try and fill that silence with ooh, and then they stammer and then they stumble over their words, and then they get confused about where they were going with their story, and it all sort of falls apart. I've been in front of audiences basically my whole life,
Yeah.
so the stand-up comedy thing just came comfortably to me. And from there, I run what's called the Cricklade Comedy Club, which is not surprisingly in Cricklade,
In Swindon,
which
yeah.
is a village just above Swindon, and it's in the Cricklade Club. Which is just on the, just on the main high street. Our next show is our next big show. It's 140 seater building. Like I say, we
Wow.
usually sell it out. The last one we sold out. We didn't sell out. We sold 100 tickets. So there were still, 40 tickets left. Which I looked at it like, oh, my life is over. The show is ruined. Oh my God, what am I going to do? I didn't sell out every single show I've ever done. But still, 100 people is a great atmosphere. We're doing the
Absolutely.
next one on the 28th of October. We're completely cutting out the summer for exactly reasons like this. We're in a heat wave right now. Can you imagine what August is going to be like?
Yeah.
No one wants to sit indoors and watch a comedy. No one wants to sit indoors at all. So, and I don't particularly enjoy doing the outside stand-up comedy venues because the atmosphere isn't the same. So we're waiting until the autumn. We're coming back for a Halloween show on the 28th of October in the
Brilliant.
Cricklade Club. Which people will be able to find details for that and tickets on my website. But we'll go over my website at the end.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I, for one, like I say, you're not a million miles away from where I live, so I'm going to try and get down to that for sure. But one final thing in relation to your comedy is you said how wrestling kind of gave you the confidence. You already had the experience of talking mm-hmm. and performing and acting in front of people. But has comedy helped you in your wrestling career in any way?
Yes, it definitely has. My first WWE tryout was in 2015, and I was training at Brookside School of Wrestling. So I was, oh God, again, I keep sounding like I'm tooting my own horn, like I've come onto your podcast to tell everyone how great I am. It sounds, I don't mean to sound like this, but because of that school and because of the way they trained us, I was on point with everything. My timing, my speed, my cardiovascular, I was on point. What you want in the performance center was exactly what they were teaching me at Brookside School of Wrestling, because Robbie Brookside's one of the trainers.
Exactly.
So everything WWE look for, everything WWE want, I was doing, except my promos.
Right.
My promos weren't good enough. I remember doing my first ever promo in front of William Regal, and I forget the other agent that was sat next to him, but I just remember it being William Regal. He said, give me a 1 minute promo. I don't care what you say, just let us know who you are. So he didn't give me any like parameters, like, I want you to do a promo where you're going to face such and such at this event. I want you to get the name of the building in there, and I want you to get the date, which will be the such and such of June, you know, whatever. So yeah. They give you like certain things you've got to get in your promo, and then they go. And you've got to do a 1 minute promo that's both entertaining but also informative, because you've got to get all the details that they gave you into that promo. They didn't do any of that. It was an open book. They basically just said, just tell us who you are. We'll give you 1 minute. We'll give you the 30 second countdown, the 15 countdown, the 10 countdown, blah, 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 you know, and just go for it. And I did a promo, which he said was serviceable. It was.
Oh, you never want to hear that, do you?
You know what I mean? It was okay. And then he gave me some pointers about what I could have done differently in the promo. And I was just like, oh, all right. Well, I can physically talk, but I obviously can't do it well. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't what they were looking for. And I did some extras work for them. I did two nights in the O2 Arena for them. One night we were Rosebuds. Do you remember Adam Rose?
I do. And
he had on his entourage.
Yeah, I've had a few Rosebuds on this podcast, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. We were Rosebuds going down to the O2, and that was an amazing experience. But again, I was just thinking in the back of my head, like, oh man, this needs to be better. I need to be better at promos. Comedy. I then had my second WWE tryout in 2019, you know, just before all the shutdown, lockdown, COVID rubbish. I did a promo, and again, so I can toot my own horn. I stood up there, and I started with like a very camp, almost effeminate kind of, because nobody was doing that. They would get one after another. People were going up and doing promos, and they were just, oh, I'm the tough guy, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to achieve that, blah, 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 blah. You better fear my name, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I just looked at them, and I had this like click in my head where I was like, no one's done anything funny. No one's done anything different. So I went up and I took my, because I was wearing glasses, I took my glasses off and put them down really carefully. And I took my, because we were all wearing suits, took my suit jacket off, put it down carefully. And then he went, okay, 3, 2, 1, go, like that. And I went, hi-ya! And I just did this ridiculous, effeminate kind of 10, 15 seconds where I was very camp, very over the top, very flamboyant. And then I told this story about how, you know, I remember my grandfather's last words before he died. He looked at me and he said, stop shaking the bloody ladder, I'm going to fall. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? And then I snapped and I said, you know, that's a funny story. People like that story. You know, they always laugh when I tell that story. The problem is it's true. And I snapped and I changed, and then I started doing this aggressive promo where the long and short of it was that I would do whatever it took to get what I want, you know, in the case of winning matches or in the case of inheriting a house, stupid stuff like that, you know what I mean? But it was the way I twisted from an effeminate character to a comedy character to a serious character to an angry character, and I did all of that in 1 minute.
Brilliant.
And then, you know, they were counting me down, and I managed to get my name out at the beginning and get my name out at the end, which for anyone watching this, that's advice. You always got to get your name twice in a promo. Say it at the beginning, say it at the end, so people remember who you are. That's
Great
just
advice.
one piece of advice. But
There we
anyway,
go.
I managed to hit all the marks, all the points that you need to hit, and it was entertaining, and bang, it was exactly 60 seconds. And I remember Regal looking at me in front of everyone, and he went, "Wow, that's how it's done," like
Yeah.
that. And I remember those words coming out of his mouth, and I was fucking elated. I was so happy. I couldn't believe it, you know. And I sat down next to my friends that were there, and you know, even I think one of the breaks, one of the time we were having something to eat, and one of them turned to me and he just said something about, "How do you feel having done the best promo of the day, or best promo of the class, or whatever it was?" Just
Yeah.
sort of. It was even acknowledged by the other people at the tryout that they were like, not envious or jealous, but you know what I mean? They were like, okay, we've just seen someone just showed us up, as it were. Like someone showed us that there's a next level to promos. And promos are so important in wrestling. They really, really are. I
Absolutely.
say
Yeah.
that having not been signed to WWE.
Well, at least you brightened William Regal's day. And with him being such a huge comedy fan as well, I know he's a huge Morecambe and Wise fan and loves his comedy.
Yeah.
And he's done some quite funny things on live TV before. But I'm sure he appreciated that. And he probably, like I say, in the back of his head, thinking, oh, that's the guy that, you know, didn't do so well last time and absolutely smashed it this time. So that's absolutely fantastic. But let's take us back. I alluded to it earlier on, this past April. And there you were, featured in the four-way championship main event for Immortal Wrestling. Obviously, you've got the champion there, Damien. You've got Sal.
The graphic was wrong, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I knew that we had Yeston Rees in there instead of Charlie Winston because Charlie had to pull out. And, of course, yourself. And that was a really, really fun day. Certainly wasn't as warm as it is today. but, like I say, being involved with them, three fantastic opponents in the main event for the Immortal Wrestling Heavyweight Championship. What do you remember about that match and about that day? Because I think the fans ate it up, and like I said, it's a really entertaining match. But like I say, four excellent wrestlers in that great main event.
I enjoyed it. Not just, you know, it's easy sometimes for people like myself to go from one show to the next show to the next show and just almost forget it, move on to the next one. And it's almost like a payday and you move on. And I've tried, especially since the lockdowns, when you really appreciate what can be taken away from you. And, you know, I was doing show, you know, like, and when you do the holiday camps where you do like two or three shows a day for 6 weeks over the holiday break, you know, it you forget show after show, it just doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But then when the lockdown happened, and almost for a year and a half, almost 2 years, I didn't wrestle, I missed it so much. And it wasn't even necessarily the scream of the audience or the cheers and stuff like that. It was the being backstage and being able to be in an environment where everyone's working towards the same thing of performing and entertaining an audience. And then I feel like almost audiences are now more appreciative of us since the lockdowns, because they don't have, or they didn't rather, have as much of an access to shows, you know, and it's almost special that shows have come back. So going to that show, I mean, everyone in the match is excellent. You know, everyone was great, but I tried my best to try and appreciate while I was out there what I was doing, rather than getting the job done and moving on to the next show. I tried to really appreciate what was happening. And so I interacted with the audience perhaps more than I normally do. I interacted with the guys at the merchandise table more than I normally do. You know, I mean, every day I stopped on a drink halfway through the match and shouted at bloody someone. You know, it was just great experience, great fun. It's in a nightclub as well, so it's got this high ceiling and this like dome effect where the noise comes back down at you, and it's just
great.
It's a great,
yeah.
It was just fun. And then I got to meet you as well, which is obviously clearly the highlight of the show.
Well, we had a lovely little chat before the show started, before they opened the doors, and I got to find out a bit about yourself. And speaking of promos, next time we are in the same venue, you'll have to kind of cut a promo in front of my banner and shout at the interviewer. No, that was a really, really good show put on by Immortal Wrestling. And like I say, hopefully they'll have you back. I think they got another show before the end of the year, but really, really good. And I want to take it all the way back now, Kay, to when wrestling first came into your life. Tell us about how you first became a wrestling fan and kind of how you fell in love with pro wrestling. I'm guessing from an early age.
Well, it was my dad's fault, if you want to say it that way. Basically, my dad was always a huge fan of the wrestling, and he actually had tickets, because he always tells me the story. He had tickets to see Hulk Hogan performing live, all right? So it was the 10th of October, 1989. They were doing a show in Wembley, and for the first time, Hulk Hogan was coming over with the then WWF in order to perform in England for the first time. And my dad had tickets. Him and his brother were going to go down and see Hulk Hogan live. Rather than just TV, wow, they were going to get to see him live. And then I was born that day, so he missed the show. So I don't even know whether me becoming a wrestler is somehow me trying to apologize to him. Like, I'm sorry, but let me just do it this way and maybe you'll enjoy that.
But and then, I mean, I've got a picture I'm going to flash up on screen. And this is an amazing picture of yourself, of your dad, watching wrestling, looking at one of the old WWF magazines from probably the early 90s, I would guess. And I'm guessing that you two bonded very early, from an early age, over wrestling. And, you know, I suppose he kind of passed on his passion for wrestling to you.
My mum always used to say to me, you'll grow out of that rubbish. You won't like that. You know, once you become a teenager and you start being, you know, you and your friends start going out chasing girls, you'll forget all about that rubbish, that stupid stuff on TV. And when I was 14, there was a counselor at my school, and I really wish I could remember his name because I would like to give him a shout out, but I'm afraid I don't remember him. It was a counselor at this school, secondary school I went to. And, you know, I was never like a troublemaker, but I had a little bit of an anger issue, and I had, you know, pent up aggression that needed to get out, whether it just teenage angst, I don't know. He suggested I find some sort of sporting activity outside of school, something, whether it be sports, whether it be music, whether it be whatever, but just something for me to get this artistic energy out of me, because he could see that I was artistic. Or maybe autistic, I don't know. But he could see that I was artistic, and then he could see that I wanted to get this expressing out of me. And he was trying to work out a way of being able to help me do that. So he spoke to me and he spoke to my dad, and he said, is there anything that he really, really loves? And I really wanted to be a wrestler. So this counselor searched for local wrestling schools. Wow. And with obviously permission from my dad and so on, we organized for me to go down to this wrestling training academy, which was Forefront Wrestling, 4FW. I believe they used to run in Swindon, but they have closed their doors now, I believe. David Sharp.
Yes.
David Sharp was the guy that ran the place. I don't know whether they still run it, but I've heard rumors that they've shut. But nevertheless, they were the ones that trained me initially before I then retrained at Brookside School of Wrestling. But they were the original trainers of me. And I don't know what happened. I can't explain it, but it was like a light bulb went off, and everything, I had a purpose, I had a reason to get up, I had a reason, and I was calmer, I was happier, I was more motivated, I worked harder at school. I can't explain it, but it was like there was this missing piece that needed to be found, and it just got slot in place, and then the machine just worked properly. It was incredible. And if it wasn't for that counselor at that school and my dad, those two who really tried their best to try and find something for me to be able to sink my teeth into, I don't know where I would have been, because as much as my, you know, my mother loves me and appreciates that I want to be happy, she no way would she have ever wanted me to be a wrestler. So it's one of those things. Everything I've achieved, I have achieved. No one has given it to me. I've gone out and done it. But would I have done any of it if it wasn't for my dad? I don't think so. If I'd had a different father, If I'd have had a different role model and a different figure in my life, I may have become such a different person. I might not have any of the things I have today. So I
Absolutely,
think it's all down to
absolutely,
him.
absolutely. And tell us about this fella here then, because you said that you started your training at the age of 14. I'm not sure how old you are here, but under the mask, I should imagine that you're still a teenager. But you started off under a mask, didn't you? And you weren't the cage juggler that we know and love today. Tell us about. I'm going to bring up the picture again. Tell us a bit about this character and how he came about.
So when I started wrestling in 4FW, I think I progressed a little faster than perhaps I was expected, you know, with my age being so young. They wanted to put me on shows. You know, they wanted to reward me for my hard work in training, and they wanted to put me on shows. But I was 14 and I looked 14, you know. So it was just after my 15th birthday. I just turned 15. So I've been training for just over a year, which again, you know, for most people, if you're thinking of this, a
That's
year
still
is not,
quick.
yeah, a year is not long enough.
No.
But nevertheless, you know, I accelerated quite quickly. And being young, supple, flexible, things like that, these kinds of things do help accelerate your progress. But they said, you know, you can't wrestle, you know, you know, got no facial hair. You look young. You look like a kid. There's no way we can put you out there like that. We have to put you under a mask. And I was perfectly happy with wrestling under a mask, but they came up with this name. And in hindsight, it was genius. But I didn't like it at first. They said, we're going to call you Cano Tango, because obviously the famous British beverage by the company Britvic is called Tango. And it's
Yes.
an orange flavored drink with a, you know, a bursting orange on it called Tango. And then they released another flavor, Apple Tango, which is exactly the same, but obviously green and an apple bursting. So that's why you saw that picture there. I was in all green because
I've just got the name now. Yeah,
I was
I've
the
just got
apple version of
the
Tango. Can of Tango, Cano,
name.
Tango, you know.
There you go.
I
A little
don't
bit slow. I got there in the end.
exactly. So we started doing that gimmick and it just took off. I mean, kids loved it. I would come out to the I would come out with cans of Tango and I would give them out to the kids in the audience and they would scream and shout like I was bloody Rey Mysterio. I definitely was not talented as Rey Mysterio, but they didn't know any better. They were only kids, you know. So I would go in, I'd do, you know, I could do backflips off the top rope and land on my feet, and I could do, you know, hurricane runners and running shooting star presses and stuff like that. So I could do bits and pieces that were quite athletic and acrobatic, which got the attention of a lot of people. Whether the matches were actually any good, I've looked back at some of them and I've watched them and I've sort of cringed and thought, there's no psychology to this match. It's just a series of flips and jumps, and then it goes to the finish. Like there's This isn't a good wrestling match. This isn't
But
quality wrestling.
you were
It's just,
15.
yeah, it's just acrobatic wrestling. It's not actually good, but people loved it at the time, and it became very popular. So we just ran with it. And Kano Tango, I was Kano Tango for quite a number of years
You were.
until I started bodybuilding. That's
Yes.
when Cage Utler came in.
So I was going to say you had quite a bit of success as Cano Tango through up until about let's see 2011, early 2011 when you kind of moved on to your next gimmick and you won the CSF I think light heavyweight championship on a couple of occasions. You're involved in ladder matches and all this great stuff. So you did have some success, and like I say, your masked gimmick did actually last probably longer than it should have.
Yes, it did. Yeah, you're right. It probably outlived it. I could have kept it going for
Because
longer.
it was a success, obviously.
It was a success, but also it was almost like a bit of a glass ceiling. It's
Yeah.
hard to do promos in a mask. And if you saw the mask, like you say, it covers my eyes and it covered my mouth. So it wasn't even like I could be expressive. You know,
Exactly.
it was completely covered. Promos are difficult when you wear a mask. Obviously, Rey Mysterio does that, and there's always exceptions to the rule, but there is a glass ceiling generally on how far you can go as a masked performer. You need to break out. And especially, like I said to you earlier at the beginning about WWE and the importance that they put on promos, my dream was to, you know, to get to the big time. And if all of the big companies are being modeled the same way, that you have to talk and you have to be able to sell yourself, a mask is getting in the way and it's tripping me up from getting to that next level. So that's where I had to move things on.
Well, this is it, and you alluded to it earlier. You took up bodybuilding around 2011, 2012, and you developed into this Cage Juggler character. And I've got a couple more pictures to bring up here, and obviously
Oh,
the
God.
latest man. And some of these are cringeworthy. I do apologize. Oh, close your eyes, Mum. Close your eyes. but this was, I mean, without the mask, it was allowing you to do so much more, wasn't it? And it was allowing you to develop more as a wrestler, as a performer, as a character, and to take on this new persona, as cringeworthy as it is 10 years on down the line. But tell us about that, because that was obviously the early days of Kay Juttler. That then allowed you to branch out further afield, didn't it?
Oh, definitely, yeah. So I started competing in bodybuilding contests in the under-18s category of the Natural Physique Association. I should also mention as well, I'm watching myself on the camera and I look terrible. I should caveat all of this with I got very, very ill, the chest infection 3.5 weeks ago. So for the last 3 weeks, I haven't trained. I'm back to normal now. I can breathe again. You know, I've gone to the gym and done a little bit of cardiovascular work and my lungs are okay again now. But I haven't done any like weights and stuff for 3 weeks. So I look a bit sort of loose and little. I'll bring it back. I should have done a pumping up before I did this promo. But anyway, sorry. So I did the under 18s category in the Natural Physique Association, which is natural drug tested bodybuilding. I then I won that. I then won a qualifying to the Heart of England Championship. And I came first in the Heart of England. I won the Heart of England Championship in the under 21s category. So there's a total, it's like a mashup between fourth place and first place. I never came any lower than fourth, but I've got several trophies and I've won a total of 8 bodybuilding awards, including, you know, the Heart of England Championship, which is like probably the one I'm most proud of. I keep pointing just past the camera because I'm in my office and I've got a trophy cabinet in the corner and they're all in there. So.
Any of those by any chance?
So the medal is fourth place in the under 21s, the very first time I did the under 21s. The figure that's, you know, not the trophy on the camera left, camera right. The one that I'm holding with my watch hand, you know, that one is the first place in the under 18s. And then the one on the far side, I think, is first in the under 21s as well. And then that one qualified me to the British finals. And then the British finals, I won this ridiculous trophy, which is like a stand with a dumbbell on it. And I was like, wow, that looks amazing. It's this, you know, it's a stand with a dumbbell on it. And I went to pick it up and the dumbbell came off the stand. And I was like, oh shit, okay. So then I put that down, but I'd also won a tub of protein and a tub of Udo's oil as well. So I was holding those and I went to put the thing down and then the Udo's oil fell out and rolled across the stage. So I then was walking across to try and catch my Udo's oil. And then one of the other bodybuilders that came second or third stepped forward to try and stop it and roll it back to me. And then I tried to pick up the other half of my trophy and this Udo's oil just rolled past me across the stage.
You were doing comedy before you even knew it.
Exactly. It was such slapstick comedy. I was just being laughed at. The greatest achievement in my bodybuilding career. And I was just being laughed at by the audience. But, you know, in hindsight, they were probably laughing at this small little man who was very, very ripped. So, you know, I was very, very lean, which is why I won. But I wasn't big. You know, it was natural bodybuilding contest when I was in my late teens, early 20s, you know, I was ripped. I had all the lines you want, but I didn't have the size necessary. So when I started the Cage Up the Character, actually began as a comedy gimmick. I used to come out with my trophies claiming that I was the biggest, strongest, toughest man in wrestling. And I have the bodybuilding trophies to prove that I'm a superhuman, like mega big, you know, big bloke. And then the hometown hero would come out, who was usually much bigger than me anyway. He'd slap me around the ring, beat me, and the crowd would be sent home happy. So it started as a comedy gimmick anyway, because I was playing off the fact that I had won bodybuilding contests and I, in my head, thought that I was bigger than I actually was. You know, in my head, I was Lou Ferrigno or Arnold Schwarzenegger or, you know what I mean, like Lee Haney. I was a monster, when in reality, I was a small little man who had won a few contests. So that was like the comedy side of it. The problem is the comedy kind of got lost after a while because I got bigger and my opponents didn't. Right. So it was almost like, right, okay, so this Kay Juttler gimmick, with you're the bodybuilder Kay Juttler, which is anyone who's interested in bodybuilding has probably already worked out that's a parody of the name Jay Cutler. Yep. Four-time Mr. Olympia Jay Cutler, Kay Juttler. You know, you just swap the letters. So that's where the name came from. So is this now a comedy gimmick or are you taking yourself seriously? Because, I mean, and again, I'm not trying to criticize anyone on the British independent wrestling scene. I'm not. Genuinely, I'm not. because I'm not the biggest guy out there. You know, Yeston Rees was in the match with me. He's bloody enormous. He's a massive guy.
He's a big old dude. Yep.
I would say I look like Yeston Rees if you washed Yeston on a 60-degree spin. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like built, but I'm like little built. Do you know what I mean? So I'm working in a lot of different promotions where I am the bigger of the two guys in the ring. And it's like, well, this isn't funny anymore. This isn't a comedy gimmick because you are actually bigger than the person you're working with. So where's this character going? So I thought about maybe changing the name, but then the name was a bit too... It stuck because I'd started working in Europe. I was wrestling in France. I was wrestling in Germany. I was wrestling in Denmark. I was wrestling in Belgium. I had done one tour at this point in America, in California. So things were going, and I thought this Cage Utler name, to change the name just as you start getting momentum, kind of it could kill your momentum. So it's I've kept the name, but the comedy value has been lost, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned working all across Europe and America, of course. How did you get the opportunity to do your matches in America? Because, I mean, according to my research, I think you had a good handful of matches over in the States. I think it was about 2012, 2013. How did that all come about?
Relentless badgering. That's how it happened. I would just send out my stuff, send out promos, send out every match that I've ever had and record it, you know, film it, cut it, edit it, and then send it out and be like, have you got any opportunities for me? I'm hungry and ready to come out. APW, All Pro Wrestling, that was run by a guy called Roland Alexander, who has sadly since passed away. He was the only promoter in the US that gave me an opportunity. No other wrestling promoter was interested in bringing someone over from the UK. Too expensive, takes too much time. You know, it don't want to do it, not interested. He was the only one that gave me an opportunity. He let me stay at his house, put me up on a inflatable bed that was terrible because it had a slow puncture. So I'd go to bed comfortable and then I would wake up in a V. It was just awful. But nevertheless, you know, it was him looking after me. I had a great experience working for APW. I did their Young Lions Cup tournament, where I got all the way to the final of that tournament, and it was me and Jeff Cobb in the final. I have made lifelong friends from my time out there, and me and my fiance Victoria very recently went out back to the States again and did some shows out there very recently, and we hang out with all of the old friends, all the old guard.
Exactly.
And, I don't know if you can see that, but Jeff Cobb took us to the Heart Attack Grill, and I don't know whether... You know, professional athletes are supposed to go to somewhere called the Heart Attack Grill.
You're allowed to treat yourself once in a while.
Oh my God, I damn near had a heart attack leaving the place. Jesus Christ, it's horrible. But yeah, you know, I've made lifelong friends out there. And so what happens is, you know, you start making these connections and then you go out more and more. And I started working for Hood Slam, which is another huge promotion that's doing so well out there. It's really, really like took off like you wouldn't believe. It's the, how do they word it? They have a wonderful tagline. It's the accidental phenomenon, that's what they call it. And it really is, because it was just a bunch of guys that got together that wanted to just have fun. And they made this scene in Oakland, California, that is just taken off like you wouldn't believe. It is amazing. So being part of that as well, you know, and being able to go back, you know, very recently in May, just gone, we went and I performed for Hood Slam again. And seeing all the same guys again and you know, reminiscing on everything. It's just lovely to be able to do that. And none of that would have been able to happen if Roland Alexander hadn't replied to me. You know, my relentless badgering and him giving me that first opportunity to be able to show what I can do in America. But no other promotion was ready to take that chance on me.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. And then there was Japan. I know that you went out to Dragon Gate and performed over there. And that must have been an amazing experience for you. Like I say, you've traveled across Europe, performed across Europe. You've done your tour of America. And then in 2016, Dragon Gate came a calling. Was it a surprise? Was it a pleasant surprise? And like I say, a great experience nonetheless.
Again, wasn't a surprise. Relentless badgering. Like, just relentless, constant emails being sent, would not let it go. You know, for every 10 emails I sent, I'd maybe get one email back. And then that one email would be a glimmer of hope. they don't have anything for me right now, but they'll keep me on file, or something, you know, along those lines. And I would relentlessly hound them again. I would fill up their bloody inbox because I was not taking no for an answer. And they took me out in 2016. I went out there and I did a few shows out there. I stayed at their dojo, which is an amazing facility. Really, really nice place. I know it sounds really stupid, but one of the things I always remember is when I went into the kitchen, I'd have like my meats and my fish and all that kind of stuff all set up in the fridge. There was always a rice cooker, always warm, always ready. So whenever you needed carbohydrates, you just dove into the like communal rice cooker. It was amazing. And since then, I bought myself a rice cooker. So I've always got rice on the go. And that's something I took from Japan, that my diet is so much better because I prepare ahead of time rather than running out and rushing and trying to get things sorted. So I know that's a really stupid thing to bring up, but you get these little moments where I wouldn't say they change your life in a way, but they just have an impact on you in a way that you didn't expect. And my diet is so much cleaner and so much better since my time in Japan because of that one small thing. A rice cooker, rice is cooked, it's just sat there staying warm, and you portion out, you know, you weigh out and portion out your rices, and you've got everything ready. You know, that is the key, especially with being on the road, driving a lot. You need your meals prepared ahead of time. So yeah, I mean, Japan was amazing. Like, no matter how much you try and watch YouTube videos of the culture and try and immerse yourself in stuff, you will not ever fully understand Japan until you physically go there. It is just this amazing metropolis, amazing experience I had out there. The fans respect you so much. It's not, you know, and I'm not trying to shit on British wrestling fans or European wrestling fans or anything like that, but it's kids' entertainment that some adults enjoy over here. Over there in Japan, it is a serious sport. It is something they take very seriously. And when you do something athletic, the noise when the crowd comes up and the excitement that builds in that room, it is amazing. My very first match out there, I wrestled KZ, and it was only probably 6 or 7 minute match, quite a short one. And you can find that on YouTube. I think if you, again, go on my website, I've got a series of matches on YouTube links. And you'll be able to find that Dragon Gate match. And just standing in that ring, you know, when he makes his entrance and all the streamers get thrown into the ring, I was looking around and I was like, I've got like goosebumps. I was just, yeah. It was just amazing. I stood in that ring looking at that giant Dragon Gate logo on the canvas and looking around at this perfect, polished, immaculate ring. Like, however many rings they own, I'm not sure. But, you know, this ring was immaculate. The floor, immaculate. The audience, everyone. People in the front rows dressed in suits. It was like an event. You know what I mean? Like, they were dressed smart to go to the wrestling event rather than, you know, shorts and a T-shirt, which is what I'm wearing now. It's a serious thing, and it's important. And it was just, to be part of that was magic. I've been in contact with another company called Kyushu Pro Wrestling. They're down in the bottom island of Japan, Kyushu. If I'm pronouncing that right, it might be Kyushu. But the point is, there is an opportunity for me to be going back to Japan soon. But obviously, that was supposed to happen in 2020. That didn't happen in 2020. It was supposed to happen in 2021. It didn't happen in 2021. Ooh. So hopefully coronavirus can finally get out the bloody way can finally return to Japan for them. Which would be amazing.
Well, what's the situation over there at the minute? Are they starting to relax the regulations a little bit? Are they allowing, dare I say it, you know, foreign visitors into the country? Because I know it's been very strict for the last 2 or 3 years, hasn't it?
Yeah, for the last 2 or 3 years, they said, no one, get out. Just don't come here. Like, I don't care who you are. Don't come here.
Yeah.
Then they started saying, okay, if you work here and you have a work visa, you can come here. But as long as you come from one of these countries and not these countries. And the list of the countries they allowed in was incredibly short. And the list of countries they didn't allow in was rather long. And we were on that list. So again, it's just been this long, arduous sort of thing. I'm in constant, well, not constant, but you know what I mean? I'm in regular contact with the promoter and he's saying, you know, there is opportunities here waiting for you. It's just the situation is fluid. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things that I just have to be patient. You know, I'm not very good at being patient. When I want something, I want it now. You know, I'm sure a lot of people are the same. Like a dog with a bone. I just can't let it go. I just got to
It'll be
keep
worth it when
going
it
for it.
happens. Yeah, definitely be worth it. Yeah,
But
absolutely.
it feels almost like it's not, you know, it's definitely not the promotion's fault. They're doing everything they can to take me over there. It's the government, it's life as we are at the moment. You know, I know Japan has reduced their strictness. You know, the new Japan guys are going back and forth as normal now. You know, Jeff Cobb is back and forth to Japan a lot, as he was telling me when I saw him in May. You know, things
Osprey.
have loosened up.
Yeah.
But he was saying about as well, like he had a quite a period of time where he just stayed in Japan just because he would go out for 2 weeks and then come home for 2 weeks. But if he came home for 2 weeks, if he then tried to go back for 2 weeks, he'd have to do a 2 week isolation and then do his 2 weeks of work. And it's like, well, what's the point in leaving? I'll just stay here then.
Just staying
So he would just
Japan.
stay in Japan for like a long period of time just because if he left, he would have to isolate when he came back. And it was a real
Yeah.
mess. That
Yeah.
whole thing, yeah, that whole situation was, and we're still suffering with it now.
Indeed. Let's talk about Kamikaze Pro, because I know that they've been a big part of your life and a big part of your career since about 2017. I think you started working for Cam Pro over in I think they're based mostly in Birmingham, or certainly the kind of Central Midlands. But tell us a bit about your journey with them, because you have been a regular fixture with Cam Pro for, let's say, since 2017. You've been very successful there. You've had some high profile matches. And in my opinion, I think Kamikaze Pro is one of them companies that doesn't always get the recognition or the spotlight that it deserves, like some of the other companies. But what's your thoughts? And give us a quick overview on your relationship with Kamikaze Pro.
So I started wrestling it for a company called NBWA in Banbury, and they had Laurie, who is the announcer and commentator for Kamikaze Pro. He would come down and do the announcing for NBWA, and that's where he first saw me, and we became friends, you know. And he created the whole long introduction for Kay Juttler. You know, the rough, buff, tough, slim, trim, thin, crisp, lean, mean, chisel, rack, stacked, and jack, 212-pound Kay Juttler. He came up with all of that because every show he would add one word to the thing. So it took ages for it to eventually
The
develop. But
entrances were like 15 minutes long.
exactly. Yeah, he used to say the rough, buff, tough Kay Juttler, and then the next one he'd say the rough, buff, tough, and jacked Kay Juttler, and then it would just go on and on and on, and it just became a running joke between me and him. And he was campaigning hard for me to work for Kamikaze Pro. And eventually in 2017, he got me a match out there. And, you know, the guys welcomed me in. It was a really, really nice atmosphere there. You know, no one was worried about losing their spot. Everyone was just sort of fun. You know, it was an easy locker room to get along with. The talent there was just that step up. You know, I was almost a bit shy and a bit worried, nervous to be part of that because they are, you know, they had some real good talent there. And then as I developed in the ring with these people, I realized, oh, no, I don't need to be nervous about this. They're just like me. They're just the same as me. They're just workers. They're just doing their job. There's no animosity. There's no one vying for my spot, trying to take my opportunity away from me trying to take an opportunity from them. Everyone's happy. Everyone's getting along. The atmosphere there is great, and they work so bloody hard to put on such a great show. And sometimes they've sold out, and sometimes it's been a little bit thin on the ground. That is nothing to do with the quality that they put on their shows. It is all to do with just the economic situation we're in now. If there's a hard time, you know, with energy crisis and prices rising left, right, and center, yeah, that every now and again they might not completely sell out a show. But they always have a decent audience. They always have a good crowd because people love the product and they love the effort that they put into that product. I am so, I know it sounds like I'm kissing ass now, but I mean this when I say that. I genuinely do mean it. Laurie, Colin, James, all of them are such nice, decent, genuine people, and they've given me opportunities that I've never got anywhere else. You know, I wrestled Keith Lee, and well, I could list a load of names. That's not important. The point is, they've given me opportunities that nobody else has given me. They have seen something in me that other people didn't see, and they've just given me that opportunity to run with it. And
Yeah.
they even made, you know, I was even became their world champion. they put the big strap on me and have me, you know, hold the company up for a period of time. You can't really repay them for believing in you. You just have to thank them and work as hard as you can. They really, like you said it best, they don't get the recognition they really deserve. They should be one of the top streaming companies in the UK. They should be the ones that NXT UK are worried about, especially because NXT UK, when they first started, basically absolutely gutted Kamikaze Pro's roster because so many of the talents that were working for Kamikaze Pro ended up being taken off by WWE. You know, it is a great place to work, and a lot of people should aspire to work there because they're good guys and they care about the product they put on. And they need more eyes on their product.
Yeah, and it's a good proving ground. I've spoke to many talents with a variety of experiences and knowledge in the business and years in the business that have worked through Kamikaze Pro. And I think it's is it Marshall X is kind of the top guy James, there. A great guy. Fantastic company and still putting on fantastic shows. One match in particular, I think since UK Wrestling returned last year, you had this match against the current Progress world champion Chris Ridgeway. That must have been a sellout at the curtain. I don't know about a sellout in the kind of the venue there, but give us your experience of wrestling Ridgeway, because I mean, since then he had a tremendous 2021, but his 2022 has just got better and better. But that must have been a great match and a good experience for both of you as well to be in the ring together.
I know, I hated it. Absolutely hated that match. I was no, I'm serious. I was really, really, really ill. It was my very first match back in two years.
It was.
Since the lockdown, of course, I had not wrestled. I went to wrestling training to try and get back into ring shape, you know, get some ring rust off of me, do my best. I then had a chest infection 2 weeks before, so I'd gotten over it, but I still wasn't. My cardio wasn't where it should be. I was heavy. I wasn't happy with my weight. I wasn't happy with my flexibility. And then I had this brilliant opportunity to compete with one of the best in the British independent scene right now. You know, all the things he's done, including his time in Japan that he's had as well. He's a great guy, really nice guy, really friendly guy backstage, excellent talent. I've got nothing bad to say about him. But I didn't like that match because I didn't perform well enough. I was really, really disappointed in myself. And I know I can say, like, oh, wow, you know, I hadn't wrestled in 2 years. What do you expect? Blah, 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 ring rust, all that. No, not good enough. That should have been an absolute barn burner. Yeah, that should have been a match that nobody could follow. That should have been an absolute classic. And it was okay because Chris carried the match. You know, Chris did his Chris thing, and he did what was good, you know, what he's good at, and then I was the body in the ring that he was doing it to. I was really, really disappointed with that match, really didn't like it, and I don't even watch it back. You know, I've got the footage of it, they've sent me the footage, and I just don't even watch it. Like, it's embarrassing. And
so how did you bounce back then? I mean, how did you bounce back from that? Obviously, you knew straight away that you weren't happy with the match. Did you go through some mental struggles after that, or did you just hit the gym a bit harder? How did you bounce back from that match?
Yeah, it was a mental struggle. I was one of them, like, real down, you know, real, like, I was really looking forward to it, and I was energized, and I had all this enthusiasm, and I was really excited about the match. And then 2 or 3 minutes into it, and I was gassed, and I was blowing, and my body was heavy, and that first bump back in 2 years. And my body just shook and my rib shook. And I was like, what is happened? I felt like a 2020 lockdown happened when I was a fit and healthy young man. And then the lockdown ended when I was this frail old man. Do you know what I mean? I just felt like, what the fuck happened to my body? What happened to me? Why am I not as fast, as quick getting up on my feet, standing back up, moving around, my ring positioning, my cardio, my energy? Why am I not? And I had I was like self-defeating, obviously, you know, pity party for myself, thinking that I was the worst and that's it, I'm done, I can't wrestle anymore, I'm no good, blah, 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 you know, all this that I've worked for, and it was all taken away from me by COVID, and blah, 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 you know, all that. And then you sit down and you say to yourself, no, you bellend, you had one bad match and you can do better, can't you? It's like you have one bad training session in the gym, yeah? You do better. You have one bad competition in gymnastics where you don't score very well. Then you go and train and you do better. You don't win your bodybuilding contest. You come second. What do you do the next time? You train and you go back better. And that's all it was. It was just a case of me telling myself to shut up,
yep.
going back to training, going back to the gym. And then with every match I had back after that, I got back into the swing of things. Things were moving. I got more comfortable in my own skin. And, you know, I'm back to where I was before, you know, if not slightly better, because I've learned to pace myself in a certain way, to react with the crowd a little bit more and enjoy the experience rather than, you know, going to work, tomorrow's another day. No, this was taken from me in the 2020 lockdowns. So now I'm going to really enjoy the experience every time I'm in the ring and make sure the audience are really connecting and enjoying what I'm doing when I'm in the ring. So I've come back better than I was before, but my first match back was not a good example of that.
Yeah. And just very briefly, do you think that you maybe needed that experience to kind of get where you are now, essentially, and maybe get back to the old Kay Jettler?
So they say in stand-up comedy, everybody has to eat shit at some point. And what they mean by that is someone has to go up on stage and die. So you might have good material, you might be good at what you do, you might have some good jokes, you might have some good stories, blah, 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 blah. But if the guy before you goes out on stage and absolutely kills it, and then they go, and please welcome to the stage, Michael Kolvig, and you're like, oh my God, I've got to follow that. That's a learning opportunity for you because you learn what to do in that situation and being able to handle an audience that is basically spent from a brilliant comedian. You've got to work out how to navigate that. So everyone has to eat shit on stage sometimes. I've done it once as well, and I remember it really clearly, and it was horrible. But you have to go through it, right? I don't think that's true in professional wrestling. I don't think that's true in sports in general. You don't have to do bad in order to do good. As long as you do the best you absolutely can, and then you regroup if it doesn't go your way. So I don't think it's the same performing art as stand-up comedy, where you have to eat shit in order to learn to be better. I don't think that's true. I just feel disappointed that my first match back should have been a bang, and it was a whimper. You know, it wasn't a bad match. Chris Ridgway's really good, but I didn't pull my weight in that match. That's what I'm trying to say.
Completely understand. And I want to talk to you about Maximum Wrestling over in over in Germany. And it's a company that... Pardon me?
I've wrestled in Germany for a few different companies, and they are my absolute favourite. Maximum Wrestling.
I was going to say that they're very close to your heart. You're very passionate about that company, very passionate about wrestling in Germany. I know that you've wrestled there for many years. And you were there, I'll bring up the picture again, but you were their champion from something ridiculous, 2018 through to the end of 2021. And I know that we've got the whole lockdown scenario being out of action for however many months.
Doesn't matter. Still counts. Still counts.
Exactly.
Longest reign
exactly.
of all time.
It might be an asterisk in the history books, but we don't care. But tell us about that, because as I said, they are a company very, very close to your heart. And you've also been a big part of their history as well. I think they came about in 2013. You started wrestling for them probably a few years later. But an incredible company.
Yeah, 2015.
And like I say, you were there. You were their champion for such a long time. But you've got a good history with them as well, haven't you?
So Marcus Selhorn was the promoter. He's very recently stepped down, but he... Andre Trucker has taken over, and I like both of them. They're both great guys. Marcus will always have a special place in my heart because he is just such a decent, kind man. And this sounds like a German stereotype, and I don't mean it to sound that way, but when he tells you you will be paid this much money, you are paid that much money. When he tells you you will be paid at this moment, you are paid at that moment. When he tells you you will be picked up at the airport by this person at this time, you are picked up at the airport by that exact person at that exact time. Not a minute sooner, not a minute later. There is just some German efficiency in the way they run that promotion. It is clockwork. Nothing, I'm not going to say nothing goes wrong, but when things go wrong, they are just handled. They are just excellent. They are a fantastic example of what a promotion should do. They are not as big as they should be. They should have more eyes on them. The same with Kamikaze Pro. They've got excellent talent in Maximum Wrestling. They just don't quite have the same eyes on them as, you know, obviously like WXW, which is obviously the biggest promotion in Germany and perhaps all of Europe. But they looked after me. Going in there, I just felt lucky to be part of the roster. And then when I found out their plans to put me, in main events and to start seeing what I could do in terms of how the audience react to me, the absolute gut visceral hate that I got when I would fly the British flag in front of them and flip them off and exactly. Yeah, that picture's perfect. I don't know why they ever booed me, but I don't know what I ever did to them. But yeah, I wrestled Carlito while I was there as well. These amazing opportunities they gave me. I have been so lucky. There's been a few promotions I've worked for that have, messed me around and we've fallen out of love with each other. And, I've decided not to work for them in the future. But there are certain companies that I will always, always prioritize. If I say I'm going to work your show, there is nothing that will get in that way. You have looked after me in the past. I will look after you. And Maximum Wrestling is one of those companies. They're a brilliant promotion. And any of your viewers, you should be going on YouTube and finding their stuff. If you are based in Germany, you should be watching them. They're in Kiel, which is the northern part of Germany. It's right next to Hamburg. Honestly, they're a great bunch of people and they deserve to be bigger than they are.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's just flash up that picture one more time. A beautiful championship there. And like I say, great
and a beautiful
promotion.
Champion.
Oh, 100%, 1,000%. But I'm learning more and more about Maximum Wrestling. And certainly during the course of my preparation for this, I certainly caught quite a bit of their stuff on the YouTube channel. So please go and check it out. Like Kay said, can't recommend it enough. Plans to, I mean, are you over there regularly? When was the last time you were over there? And what are the plans with Maximum going forward?
The last time I was over there in December 2021, and then I was due to be there in February 2022, but then they had a mini lockdown in Germany again. And then they shut everything down. The show ended up getting cancelled because they were only allowed to have something like 50 people in the audience, which is ridiculous. They sell that building out, they're hanging from the rafters, so 50 people would have just been empty. February got cancelled. And then I was supposed to go out there on the 7th of, I'm sure it was the 7th of May, but they had no flight home that same night. It was a flight the following afternoon. And my flight to America was the 8th of May. So I couldn't fly out, do their show on the 7th and then get to America on the 8th because the flights didn't work out. So I was supposed to be there in May, but I couldn't be there then. So February got cancelled. And May, I couldn't make it. And I was heartbroken I couldn't make it in May because that was when Marcus Selhorn said his farewell to everyone. And that man means a lot to me. So I was really disappointed that I couldn't be there to see his farewell. But I had a lot of dates in America and had a lot of business over there. So I had to do that.
As we start to wind down this episode of Wrestling with Jonas, we did have a question sent to us before we went live from a Richie Harrigan via YouTube.
So, okay, Jutler.
Hi, Richie, and thank you for watching via YouTube. Kay, who is your dream match to be with? So, do you have any dream matches, any dream opponents, Kay?
Yeah, I have three. Bret Hart was always my favorite as a kid. So I always wanted to have a technical wrestling contest with Bret Hart. Obviously, that can't happen. The other one was Kurt Angle. He was always my favorite in my teens. I always looked at him and matches with the particular Chris that we're not allowed to name. The matches he had with him were just, I mean, they hold up now better than 90% of what you see on the scene at the moment. They are just true wrestling matches, the most believable I think I've ever seen. They're absolutely, he was a once in a lifetime. He was Kurt Angle at his prime, at his absolute best, was, I don't think anyone could fully appreciate how truly brilliant that man was. And then the only other one would be AJ Styles, which I believe at the moment, and people will argue, people will argue all they want. If you're a fan of wrestling, I completely appreciate what your opinion is. But because I actually do it and I'm in the ring, and so I know certain things that maybe might not be obvious to other people, AJ Styles, I think personally, from what I see, I think he is the best wrestler in the world right now. Yeah. Everyone will have a different opinion. There'll be, all sorts of names thrown around left, right, and center. But I think how safe his movements, his speed in the ring, his timing, everything, there is just a certain flow with AJ Styles that I just think he is. Well, sounds ridiculous. Yeah. He is phenomenal. Funny,
yeah. But both him and Randy Orton.
Matches.
Yeah, yeah. couldn't disagree with any of your choices there. And final question from me then. Look, so you've had a long, illustrious career in the wrestling business. You've done some great things in competitive bodybuilding and, of course, comedy. But if you were to pinpoint maybe two or three of your most proudest moments from your professional career, whether it be wrestling, comedy, bodybuilding, what would you pinpoint down to your top two or three?
I'll try one from each. Winning the Heart of England Championship in bodybuilding, that was a great achievement. Winning the Funhouse Comedy Gong Award, that was a great achievement of mine. But I think the bigger achievement in terms of stand-up comedy is the shows that I run. You know, the Cricklade Club, selling out 140-seater building every time that we run there, putting on these fantastic nights, putting on these brilliant shows. You know, I think I'm most proud of that in terms of stand-up comedy. And my proudest, biggest achievement in wrestling, I think, is winning the Maximum Wrestling Heavyweight Championship, because it's one thing. I've won eight. Nine. I beg your pardon. Sorry, because I won something multiple times. I've been a 9-time heavyweight wrestling champion. 8 of those have been in the UK, and one of them has been abroad. And you have to appreciate, to put the belt, to put someone in a position where they can win the belt in their home country is one thing. To put it into position where a foreigner can win your championship belt and be the top star in your company, and they live abroad, which means you have to accommodate flights and hotels and you know, all of this extra expense that goes along with someone having your championship. Putting me in matches with people like Carlito and top talent from around the world, like Michael Schenkenberg and places, people like that, you know, you're putting a huge amount of trust in someone who isn't round the corner, who isn't down the road, someone you have to facilitate flights and accommodation for and things like, you know, to be a champion of a home promotion is a brilliant achievement and an amazing honor. But doing it abroad, being trusted that much to be in a position to be a champion of a company off your soil, outside your country, that I think is probably my, aside from my WWE bits and pieces, you know, that is probably my biggest achievement in wrestling, is being a champion of a company outside of the UK.
Yeah. And what are your plans and goals for the future then? Like I say, I'm guessing you've got a busy schedule for the next few months, possibly up to the end of the year with pro wrestling and other things. Do you have any plans and goals and things you'd still like to achieve in pro wrestling?
Loads of stuff. So I've got one thing that's happening in America, which I'm working towards, which I can't discuss, which, you know, probably shouldn't have even mentioned then, really, should I, if I can't explain it on the podcast? So sorry, but we talked about that off air. Something happening in the States coming up soon. And then outside of that is focusing again on what should have happened in 2020 and what should have happened in 2021, is finally getting back out to Japan after this long awaited hiatus and working back out there again. Hugely excited about that opportunity. And then that's really as far. I'm one of those people that I'll have one or two goals in my head and that is it, because I have to dedicate so much of myself to that, that if I have 7 or 8 goals, things will go by the wayside. I'll half-ass this, I'll half-ass that. I have to absolutely devote myself to these things. The project coming up in the US is a huge project that's going to require a lot of my time. So most of my energy is going on that, and paperwork for some of that is I'm going to be doing straight after this. So I'm going to be burning the midnight oil on that project.
There we go.
And then Japan is just something that is long overdue, I think.
Absolutely. And before we let you go, an opportunity for you to throw out to my viewers, to my listeners, any social media, so where they can reach out to you, say hi, find out and learn more about Kay Juttler, maybe see some of your matches or buy some merch. I've got it scrolling along the bottom of the screen there. But if you've got a Facebook, a Twitter, an Instagram, a website, where can we reach out and say hi?
Twitter is full of robots. I don't like Twitter. I think it's crap. So you can follow me on Twitter if you like. But
I didn't even put a Twitter one down there, actually. It's not a Twitter one on there.
So. Honestly, it's at K Juttler. Yeah, at K Juttler is my Twitter. If I'm wrestling somewhere, they'll tweet it and I'll retweet it. That's like the extent of my involvement on Twitter. I don't understand it. I don't understand how you could be mentioned in a comment on somebody else's comment that's on some other thread, and you're trying to find the original thread and trying to work back through where the hell has this come from. Oh, bugger that bloody app. I can't stand it. I've turned the notifications off. I don't even, honestly, I hate the bloody thing.
I don't blame you.
You can find me on Twitter, but I won't be there.
But you're more visible on Instagram and Facebook, aren't you?
I am very visible on Instagram. So you can find me on Instagram, which is not Cage Utler. It is the stage name for professional wrestling. When I perform stand-up comedy, I use my birth name. So you'll find it at M Kolvegg. Okay. My website's kolvegg.co.uk. Hopefully that's scrolling across the screen as well. So you'll be able to see how that's spelled, which is an awkward spelling of my last name, K-O-H-L-W-E-G. So M Kolvegg is my Instagram, and my website is kolvegg.co.uk, and you'll be able to find tickets for comedy shows and YouTube links to matches of mine and all goodies and embarrassing photos of me with my shirts off. So
yeah, and we make sure the link to all of those are in the description to this podcast. So if you're watching this on YouTube or on any of the audio platforms, please click on the link and support Kay Jutler. But before we go, I do need to announce who my next guest is going to be, and it's actually only going to be in a couple of days' time. And it's going to be this gentleman here, Tate Mayfair's going to be my guest live on Wrestling with Jonas Live this coming Thursday, so in just 2 days' time at 8 p.m. UK time. You are not going to want to miss that. Absolutely doing some wonderful things in 2022 across the UK. You may well have seen him on Progress, you may well have seen him on NXT UK, and all across the indies over here in the UK, doing some great stuff. But Kay, you've been an absolutely amazing guest.
I've been a sweaty mess, that's what I've been.
on this very hot and sticky Tuesday evening. But I want to thank you so much for your time. If you've got one final message to my listeners, to my viewers, to your fans, followers and friends out there, anything you'd like to say before we depart.
Yes, 4,000 people told me I can't do something, but I said I could, and then I went and did it. So don't ever let somebody tell you you can't do something. You might not be good at it, but you can bloody try, can't you?
There we go. Kay Jutler, thank you very much, and catch you down the road, my friend.